Throwing it all away for a bowl of couscous will never be the same. This is Ali, Fear Eats the Soul.
Everybody, welcome to Seen and Heard. This is the podcast where we talk about the Sight and Sound list, the Sight and Sound top 100. Yeah, this week we're doing Ali, Fear Eats the Soul, the Rainer Werner Fassbinder movie from 1974.
Yep.
Yes.
You are correct.
This is one of the many movies that's tied for last place on the number 93. We're at the bottom this week.
Mm-hmm. This is the third movie from the bottom on the list.
They made it this like needlessly confusing. They could have just
they really did.
Last week we did Tokyo Story, the Ozu movie, which was at the top. Now we're at the bottom.
Okay, Greg, what have you been watching?
So I went to see on the big screen. I saw Eyes Wide Shut, 35mm, with some friends, actually from the film club that I run, the Arroyo Film Club.
Shout out.
A couple people who've been joining who I'd never met before, and they live in LA, and they've been on for a couple months. They're good people. And we went and saw Eyes Wide Shut. It's great. I love it. First of all, I first saw that movie. It was a couple years after. It came out in 99. It's Kubrick's last movie. I think I saw it in like 02. And even then, I was like, what? I don't know. It's like 14. Even then, I fucking loved that movie. And the word at the time, the consensus was, oh, this is like Kubrick's last movie. It's like not deserving. Like it's this kind of mess of a movie. That's a fucking masterpiece. And I feel like now people are finally coming around. Honestly, it's just another instance of me being ahead of the curve. I was 14. I knew it was a fucking great movie.
What a trailblazer. You're just like
I hate to say it, but I really am.
Didn't you saw it at 14?
Yeah, it was like 14, 15.
I haven't seen it. Isn't it really inappropriate for a 14-year-old? See, my parents were so strict. I could never see a rated R movie at 14. Ever.
Really? I wore my parents down.
How?
By just like pestering them. And I used to go get movies. I'd ride my bike to the video store, get like an R-rated movie, and then I would come back and I would put it down like my pants so they couldn't see it, and I would sneak it into the house. And then I'd wait for them to go to bed and I would watch.
Question, how were you allowed to rent it at the video store? They didn't ask ID?
No. No. Well, I bought them on DVD. I just bought them. Yeah. Like I saw Fight Club for the first time that way.
And you owned the disc.
I owned the disc. And
we're very different. I could never.
I really did wear my parents down. I remember specifically it was Pulp Fiction. Because my dad, I remember, was like, oh yeah, you should see that movie someday. I was like, how about now? And he was like, no, you should probably wait a little bit. And I was like, how about now? And then finally they're like, fuck, all right.
Oh my God.
You could see Pulp Fiction.
No, I was very good. I never did that. I still don't buy movies I've never seen. I know you like to do that.
You know, sometimes. It depends. Back then, because I couldn't go rent it from Blockbuster because they ID there. They're super strict. And there was no streaming. Mm-hmm. So it's like if I wanted to see the movie, the only option was to buy it. Yeah. And it was like from a record store where they didn't care. Like they weren't like, oh, you're too young for this.
Rasputin, like, right?
Rasputin, and there was a place called The Warehouse, Warehouse Music, where I lived, and I would get movies from there.
Nice.
So I saw Eyes Wide Shut, and that was great, seeing that on the big screen. Had not seen it on the big screen before, and I don't think I'd seen it in like 10 years or something. It had been a while. But yeah, sure, it's a little inappropriate, but it's just sex. It's nothing too crazy. Like that age, I saw much, much worse stuff with like graphic violence and stuff. And then I also revisited another favorite with some friends, one of who had not seen it before, Children of Men.
That's so funny.
Why?
Because I went to the Academy Museum.
Oh yeah, how was that?
Really cool. And there was this whole section on Emmanuel Lubezki, is that how you say his last name?
Yep.
A whole section on him and a bunch of clips. So when I was going to talk about what I've seen, I watched one movie this week, and I also watched maybe 100 clips at the Academy Museum.
Which equals like a movie.
Oh my gosh, it was overwhelming. I could have spent hours in there watching those clips. So many clips. So many. Anyway, my sister saw the scene from Children of Men, the car, the really long shot.
Where they're pushing the car?
No, where Julianne Moore
gets shot. Oh, where she gets shot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And she was blown away. She's like, what movie is this? I need to watch this like right now. And I'm like, that's Children of Men. You would love it. So it's very funny that you watched that.
Did she watch it?
Not yet, but we're gonna.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It's so good.
And it's the kind of movie where like every couple years I'm like, wait, is that as good as I remember it? And then I'll rewatch and I'm like, yeah, thank God it is.
Really
it really is.
The other movie I only watched one movie in the past week, and it was Mon Oncle.
Oh, yeah.
Jacques Tati.
You liked it?
Yeah, what's not to like?
Was that your first Tati?
It was. It was my first Monsieur Hulot. And he was very charismatic. It's so funny because I thought he was mute for the first half hour of that movie. And then he speaks. So I watched that movie because I've been trying to catch up with the film club.
Oh.
Because I've been very bad, and I know that you guys watched it.
We
last
did.
Year.
We did it.
And I still haven't watched
several
it.
Several weeks ago for finally, the film club.
So I finally watched it. And yeah, I loved it. What's not to like? Really, what's not to like?
I hate saying stuff like this, but if there was like a top 30 movies that I had to make like for myself, that
really?
Would be on my top 30. I love that movie
I love
so,
it too.
So
I love it too.
Much.
Should we get into this week's movie after blabbering about everything under the moon?
I think we should. I think we should talk about 1974.
Ali, Fear Eats the Soul.
Ali.
Ali, Fear Eats the Soul was released in 1974 in West Germany. It was written and directed by Rainer Werner Fassbinder. On a rainy night, a 60-year-old widow, Emmy, wanders into a bar she frequently passes by to get dry and to inquire about the interesting music she always hears coming out of it. The bar is a hub for a group of Arab immigrants known as foreign workers or guest workers. There, she's swept off her feet by Ali, a mechanic originally from Morocco. He's a perfect gentleman, and soon they fall in love and get married, much to the chagrin of her children, her adult children, I might add, her co-workers, pretty much everyone around them. Eventually, they drift apart due to Emmy's efforts to fit in with her clearly racist friends and neighbors, and after an infidelity and a confrontation at work, Ali and Emmy eventually reunite at the same bar where they met. And while dancing and declaring their love for one another, Ali collapses. The film ends in a hospital where the doctor informs Emmy that although he will recover from stomach ulcer, this condition is common in foreign workers due to stress, and another ulcer will likely come in 6 months. And the film ends very sweetly with Emmy holding his hand.
Yeah.
At his bedside.
Yeah.
It stars Bridget Mira as Emmy, El Hedi Ben Salem as Ali, and a quick fun fact, Fassbender himself plays the crummy son-in-law.
Crummy? I love that word so much.
He's so crummy.
Yeah.
The film is based on and kind of an homage to All That Heaven Allows.
Pretty much a remake.
By Douglas Sirk. Yes, yeah. A remake. I didn't know how much of a remake it was.
It's you know what? It's pretty close. It's actually pretty close. Like, it's closer than, because we just did Tokyo Story last week, and that was based on Make Way for Tomorrow. And that's kind of a loose thing. Like, he takes the idea. This is like, you know, they're,
it's pretty much,
the beats
yeah.
are kind of there. They're like the same runtime. They have the same last shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
You love that movie.
I do love that movie. Yeah, I know we talked about it when we did Imitation of Life, and I was not a huge fan of that. I do love All That Heaven Allows, and it is kind of a holiday favorite. But yeah, it's pretty close. It's pretty close.
Great. This film was shot in 14 days.
Yeah.
And the budget was equivalent to like $98,000, which is insane.
This was, so he's, first of all, Fassbinder died at 37 or something, had made over 40 feature movies in that time. So he was a workaholic. And essentially, this movie was sandwiched in between two kind of...
I heard that.
Like, this was almost like a throwaway for him. It was like to keep him busy. So it was this kind of like smaller budget, faster shot like movie that...
And yet it's on the list. It's the only one on the list.
Yeah.
One thing to keep in mind in terms of like background, there's a moment where Ali mentions the disaster in Munich, and I didn't know what that was. And I looked it up, and it's referring to the killing of 11 members of the Israeli Olympic team during the 1972 Munich Olympics. So 2 years before this movie came out.
Yeah, have you seen the Spielberg movie, Munich?
No. Oh, is that what it's about? Uh-huh. And they were taken hostage and killed by a Palestinian terror group called Black September. So that is the Munich that this takes place in.
Yeah. It's, you know, this is post-war Germany, West Germany.
Post-war Germany plus post that.
Yeah, yeah. It's
not a good place.
It's a pretty bleak place. And as Emmy in the movie says, I mean, she is an ex-Nazi, you know, a part of the Nazi party, and everyone she knows was, you know. So that is the world we're dealing with.
Initial thoughts on this movie. Had you seen this movie?
I had. I saw this maybe 8 years ago. I think it was the first Fassbender I'd seen, because this is kind of like the big one that people talk. And of course, this is the only Fassbender on the list. So this is like kind of his signature movie. I'd seen it before and I was kind of indifferent to it. And I rewatched it recently and loved it. I don't know what was wrong with me 8 years ago. Maybe it's just those 8 years of growth I needed to appreciate this story.
Yeah. Recovering film, bro. It's okay. You're among friends.
Maybe it wasn't flashy enough when I first saw it. I don't know.
Not enough superheroes, huh?
Listen, now you've gone too far. I'm not into superheroes. But yeah, you know, this is a great movie. This is a great movie. Truly.
I agree. And my initial thought.
Yeah, had you seen it before?
No. And my initial thought, I've talked a lot about this on the podcast, where we have a young woman falling madly in love with an older man. And when it started and when they're dancing, I'm like, finally, a woman has this strapping, handsome young man. She falls in love with him. He falls in love with her. I was just, I was so happy. I was really, really happy.
I was thinking of you the whole time. I'm like, Jackie's going to be so happy because this is what she's been talking about.
Literally. And I mean, this movie's great at first impressions. I think just the beginning, that first little, it was confusing because it came up before anything on screen. It just said happiness is not always fun.
I love that.
And it wasn't really a quote and it's not the title of the movie. So I was just kind of like, but it's in your mind the whole time, and you know what you're getting, like, from the first second. So if we're talking actual first initial thoughts, I thought that was fantastic. I think the first 10 minutes of this movie are phenomenal. The bar, the music, her sitting there lonely, coming over and dancing with her. I mean, I was swooning. I was swooning. The beginning gave me chills. When they're all staring at her when she walks into the bar, chills.
The music. Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
And another initial thought I had, so I didn't realize the language too much. So I noticed this, that the subtitles, whenever Ali was speaking, were a little off.
Like broken German. Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought, obviously I don't speak German, but it was broken English, right? The subtitles.
Yeah.
But I didn't really catch it until he said, "I go home with you to door, not going alone. Better." And I, like, in that moment I was like, okay, that's what they're doing.
You didn't get it when he said
not
to the
really
woman,
"I don't dance." Wait, what does he say?
He says it to the woman that's the bartender who he ends up sleeping with later. Yes. She asks him in the beginning.
Couscous lady.
Yeah, Couscous lady asks him, like, "Oh, do you want to go home with me?" And he says, "No,
cock broken. I don't know why I didn't catch it. Maybe I was just, I don't know, mesmerized by the movie. Cock broken, yeah, he does say that.
Yeah.
Maybe I was just, it was so chivalrous of him, the way that he said it, that he's going to, like, going home alone is not good, I'm going to walk you to your door, and I don't know, but that was when I first noticed it, and I thought it was strange.
Yeah.
I, too, thought it was strange that that's when I noticed it, because I was like, okay, are there just, like, subtitle typos here?
No. Cock broken. Something he doesn't seem to have actually had a problem with, too.
Never.
Yeah, I think that was just his way of rebuffing.
Funny.
Yeah.
You can say cock broken. and not sound like you don't speak the language. Cock broken.
Yeah, I guess so.
When she says you're so beautiful, she sees him in the shower.
Oh, yeah, I know. This is a handsome man.
He's so handsome.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just has like the swagger too.
Definitely. He's so cool. It's his quiet, cool energy.
Confident.
And he says it how it is. That guy's not a good man.
Yeah.
That woman's not a good woman.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know about the history behind his history with Fassbender? And
no. Tell it to me.
So New German cinema kind of started in 1962 when the Oberhausen Manifesto was issued in 1962. So it was this kind of new movement where this whole group of young filmmakers was like, no, we don't want anything to do with the previous German film industry. We're going to start our own thing, just like the French were doing, mm-hmm. just like the British were doing. You know, it was everywhere was popping up with their own new wave, Australian mm-hmm. new wave. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have the new German cinema or the German new wave, which honestly is one of my favorite sort of movements in cinema. But the top three are the big hitters of the new German cinema were Fassbender, who was the most prolific, mm-hmm. Herzog, who was probably also, it was just like popping movies out right and left, and then Wenders, who's I think my personal favorite. But Fassbender got started, he kind of came from this broken home, and his parents weren't happily married, and there was always sort of like family staying with them at their house that were immigrants from like Poland. So I think that factors into this a lot in the movie. But
of course, what do they say? The neighbors see her and say like, Kowalski, she's not even German.
Yeah, she's Polish. Mm-hmm. I think she's supposed to be Polish. So
her husband was Polish.
Her husband, yeah. She's a widow. But yeah, so the actor that plays Ali, he was with Fassbender. So they met at a like a bathhouse in Paris a couple years before this. They were together. And then they had this tumultuous, insane relationship where like they would get drunk, they'd beat each other up. It was this like really violent, volatile thing. So he puts them in this movie. I think they had broken up just before this movie came out or just before they started making the movie. A couple years later, he stabs three people in Berlin, has to be removed from the country, gets arrested in France, and then while he's in custody, hangs himself. And this happens 3 years after Ali Fears the Soul. So this happens in 1977. So,
like, you're talking about El Hedi Ben Salem, right?
Yep.
Not
the Fassbender. Character.
No, oh. I thought you were talking about Fassbender for a second.
Oh, no. No. Yeah, Salem.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so Fassbender was a very volatile figure. He's a very controversial figure because it's funny because people give a lot of shit to Roman Polanski or like there's these problematic directors. Not that I'm excusing anything that any of them have done, but Fassbender seems to have gotten a pass. So the woman in this movie that plays one of Emmy's daughters, mm-hmm. the one that's with Fassbender in the movie.
Yeah, I think her name is
the character's name is Krista. The mm-hmm. actress is Herman. So she was a secretary that Fassbender forced to act in movies. And she'd been in
Was she his secretary?
She might have been his secretary. But yeah, he forced her to act in movies. And she was in a couple of his before this. One was The Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant. And he literally, I think it might have been after this movie, but they were together. And he literally almost beat her to death in a street. Like,
you guys can't see, but my jaw just dropped.
Yeah, he's. It's safe to say Fassbender was a huge piece of shit. Like, yeah, just a terrible person. Terrible person.
Was he arrested?
I don't know. There seems to not be too much consequence for
the
stuff
he did. He died young, right?
He died young, but he died of drugs. Yeah, it was an overdose. Cocaine and barbiturates.
My God.
But he lived a very intense, depraved life. And
it's dripping from his face. That's why I called him Crummy.
Yeah, he does have a very sleazy, grimy look to him. Yeah.
Gross.
But the fact that someone so
gross
and terrible could make such a beautiful movie, you know, that's kind of
wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of history with, because he would reuse a lot of the same actors. And so a lot of the people that you see in this movie, he's probably had a relationship with some point and probably beat them nearly to death. And, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
My gosh. I was not expecting that. I hadn't done much research into him. I knew that he was a piece of shit just because of Letterboxd. And I knew he died young because of this one feature that I watched on Criterion.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane. It's truly insane that people, yeah, it doesn't seem to really get brought up. Like, yeah, Fassbender. Yeah, of course. Like, go ahead.
And no one mentioned it.
And you're like, but he's this huge trash boy. But yeah, so that's the story with, you know, him and his actors in this movie. At least two of the actors who he's, you know, done terrible things to.
And horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
The stabbing is also surprising.
And that's
yeah.
El Hedy.
Yes.
We're not talking about Fassbender.
Yes.
He stabbed three people. They apparently lived.
Oh my goodness.
But had to be smuggled out of Germany after that.
I heard he was a guest worker in real life.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
That's what I saw in the Criterion featurette.
Oh, interesting.
No mention of Fassbender being a piece of shit in that, by the way.
Wow. Yeah, they would just get drunk and like beat each other up.
Wow. Well, let's talk about, so you've seen more of Fassbender's movies than I have.
Is this your first
this
one?
This is the only one.
I've seen a few. I'm not like a Fassbender expert or anything. I've seen the big ones.
So is this style, is his very, you know, there's a lot of static shots that last for a very long time. There's a lot of doorway shots. There's a lot of, what else? Tracking shots, great tracking shots.
Yeah, there are a lot of people framed in doorways. Yeah.
Doorways.
Used
so
really well.
Many.
Yeah.
So many.
It's this, you know what, this movie's kind of a stripped down version of a Fassbender movie. Because when I think of Fassbender, I think of something like a little bit more opulent.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was obsessed with Douglas Sirk and kind of doing his version of these colorful melodramas. So mm-hmm. if you look at something like The Marriage of Maria Braun, or you look at something like Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant, or he did this epic like 10-hour miniseries called Alexander Berlin Alexander Plots. They're these kind of epic, mm-hmm. big productions. And
I would have never thought that based on this movie.
Yeah, it's very stripped down. Yeah, and I think it all comes from the fact that it was made so quickly and cheaply and like between projects. But it does, it's beautifully made in the sense that it's very...
Beautiful.
It's just what you need, and it is very, like what you were saying, the camera is very just still.
It's a lot of people gawking at people.
Yeah.
Like
how about the scene? Oh, no, go ahead.
No, you first.
When she goes to visit him at work, is that what you're going to talk
about?
That
one. Also, the yellow chairs, the park. First of all, that park scene destroyed me. The yellow chairs, and then we close in, and we see all of the workers at the cafe just staring at them. From over Ali's shoulder, I was speechless. I was like, it gives it this very surreal quality, very tableau. Now I'm just like spitting out words, but
no,
it's true.
It's
very tableau-like. It's very much setting up a shot, mise-en-scène, if you will. But what I mean is that there are these great static moments where there's something in the foreground, there's something in the background, or not even. It's just these tableaus. Like, for example, when they're in the Italian restaurant and they're just staring and you see them through the doorway and they're just perfectly symmetrical
staring towards the camera.
Yes.
Almost. Yeah.
Yes. For a good like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
They're long shots. But I thought it was really, really beautifully made.
There's a sure hand behind it. There's not any wasted time. Like it's patient. It's patiently told. But there's not a sense of it being like, okay, like let's move on to the next thing. Mm-mm. It knows exactly what to tell you and
right,
when. And it's,
right.
It is, yeah.
How about the shot where he's taking a shower and like we're seeing it through the mirror?
Yeah.
Incredible.
That's the one where she walks in?
Yeah. And she says, "You're really beautiful, Ali."
Yeah. And can we just say more movies? I mean, again, this is like common of German movies and a lot of other movies from other countries, but let's normalize seeing dicks in movies. Why is it this? Honestly, when I see a dick in a movie, you're like, okay.
Respect.
You're like, okay, I'm in real life now.
Yeah.
So I just see some guy standing there with his dick out. It's just because in America, it's such a taboo thing.
Yeah.
You never see it. And if you do, like Michael Fassbender
yes.
in Shame, people are like,
oh,
they can't
my
stop talking
God.
About it. They're like, oh my God, did you see his dick? It's like, here's a guy just taking a shower.
But this is what I'm saying. And it adds something. Like it adds something. And I feel like it adds something important in this movie because it, like I said, it is very much a woman falling for this very handsome young man. And we don't see that enough. We don't see women being satisfied enough. I'll just say it. Like, we just don't. It's always about the man. It's always about the boobs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important in this movie.
Yeah.
That's my stand on nudity. I don't think I will say that, like, okay, yeah, when I see it, when I see a penis, I'm like, yes, this movie gained my respect. I think it is very much, I think it varies from movie to movie.
It's sad that I feel that way too, because it is so taboo that we just never see it.
Right.
And it's like when one does it, you're like, oh, they went there. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Let's talk about Emmy. You like Emmy?
I do like Emmy. Despite the fact that she's an ex-Nazi.
Right. Yes, I like Emmy. The easiest way to get me on board with someone, this makes me sound so shallow, but the easiest way for me to empathize with someone, when I see them sitting alone somewhere, eating or drinking, my heart just melts.
What's the first time that we see her in this?
When she comes into the bar. The bar and yeah. She's sitting and drinking orders her Coke alone. Yeah. Here's the thing about Emmy. I think that her character arch is very much representative of like the theme itself. Like she is the theme of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, she starts out, she's in love with him, but she does have, I mean, she has internalized racism. I mean, who couldn't be more inherently racist than someone who was a former Nazi?
Yeah.
And that goes to say that that's relevant for everyone around her. They're literally in West Germany a few years after the war. Like, it plagues everyone around her. And as loving as Emmy is, and as much as she believes that Ali and the other immigrants are good people, she still defends the people around her who are racist. She still says, like for example, the landlord's son, after he, actually, he's not that bad.
Well, he's one of the better people.
He's one of the, exactly. Because at the end, he does say, you know, they look very happy. I don't see anything wrong here. But he comes to Emmy's apartment to tell her you can't have a subletter because the neighbors have noticed that Ali has moved in. So he comes to tell her you can't have a subletter. And she says, we're getting married. And he says, oh, okay, then bye. And he leaves. And after he leaves, Ali says he's not a good man. And Emmy says he's like everyone else, no better, no worse. So she defends them a lot. She defends her very racist coworker who comes over. And basically, is that when she says, because I know she said nonsense, she's all right. She says it to someone. Is it about her? I don't remember. To someone, the same thing happens. Ali says, you know, that woman's racist. And she says, no, she's all right. Like, it's okay.
Well, Emmy's also very quick to get back in people's, like, for example, after the shopkeeper, the shopkeeper kicks Ali out, or basically will not sell to him this mm-hmm. butter, this mm-hmm. margarine. Mm-hmm. And she goes over, tells him off. He says, you guys are banned. And of course, he wants to have her back, like, because his wife is like, no, you need to go apologize because she's been a customer for 20 years. How quickly is Emmy swayed back?
So,
and the same with her friends
who
are shitty.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying. Her arch is like the arch of the entire movie, basically. Yeah. So, she brings it up twice, saying, you know who Hitler is? And not in a bad way, in more of like, you know,
like
we used to have
way.
This guy named Hitler. They go to his favorite restaurant for their wedding luncheon.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, I always want to go here. Hitler used to eat here. And it's, but okay, so that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then she comes around. The shopkeeper's the one that kind of turns her. She goes and tells him off. He's the only one that she really tells off. I think she tells off her neighbors a little bit too. That's when it's building. And then she reaches the low point after her kids have basically excommunicated her. She's eating alone at lunch, which again made me cry.
That doesn't make you shallow at all.
Leave.
Who doesn't feel something for someone that's...
I can't watch her eating alone on those stairs. It makes me so sad. So that happens. And then the park. The park is the ultimate low point. She starts sobbing at the table. She calls them swines for looking at her, saying, this is my husband. This is my husband. She tells the world, you know, like that's her character peak. But then she has this downfall. It takes this turn. And that's what I'm saying when I say this is the whole movie. I think that the whole thing is about the danger of how much we need human acceptance. Like, I think that's what this movie's about.
Yeah.
Because that's her high point, right? Her low point is actually her high point, because it's when she's standing up and saying, this is my husband. I don't care. You guys are swines. And then they go on their trip and they come back. And then everyone needs things from her and they start being nice to her again. And she just does a 180 because she's so happy that people are being nice to her. She says, when they're at the park, she says, I pretend I don't care, but I do. And that also broke my heart.
Well, it's like when she has him go down to help one of the neighbors move stuff in the cellar. And they've been so shitty to her.
Yeah, yeah.
And she so quickly is like, oh, you're going to go do this because you know, if we're nice to them, they'll be nice to us.
So that happens. Yeah. So this is all after they come back on from her trip. And everyone, they're not actually like cured of their racism. They just need things.
They need
things. The shopkeeper needs a customer. The neighbor needs to move things into the cellar. Her son needs a babysitter. That's why he comes back. The coworkers need to talk about their rate. The coworker one was kind of weird. And now there's a new foreigner within their myth. And they leave her on the stairs to eat alone. And she's eating her sandwich. They're down there talking. And she doesn't know what they're saying. I hate that. And she just turns back and she accepts them all. And she's like, finally, people are being nice to me. There's that ridiculous moment where they're feeling his muscles. The coworkers have come over and they say, oh, he actually looks clean. And she's like, yeah, he actually showers every day. She doesn't say like, how dare you talk about.
Feel his muscles.
She doesn't say like, how dare you think my husband would be dirty. She says, feel his muscles. He's really strong. And then she says like, oh, he's just in one of his foreign moods.
Yeah.
Moods or something. And she just, it's so sad. We watch her rise and fall, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it just shows that systemic racism is just like so firmly implanted in her and everyone around her. But the fact that, I mean, look. She is at, when they first meet at that bar, and he comes up to her to ask her to dance, she's definitely apprehensive. Mm-hmm. I think partially because he's Moroccan, but also because she's like, why is this young guy coming up to me and talking to me? Like, they're, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. She just very quickly, I think, okay, so I don't think in this movie she ever like completely accepts the fact that he's from Morocco. I think it's like the kind of thing where she's getting all
this
attention.
Why won't she make couscous?
She won't make couscous, and she's swooned by this young, much younger, 30-plus hot man, and I think that's like enough for her. And I think it's not that she like is accepting like, oh yeah, we can have this interracial relationship. It's more like, oh, this hot young guy is interested in me. I'm gonna sweep all this other stuff under the rug.
Maybe. Like,
because it does come out later. Yeah, I mean, she stops kind of defending him at a certain point.
That's true. But yeah. Then she also goes to him and says, she goes back to him basically and says like, I need you. Like, I don't care. You can sleep with other women. I think once she loses him, she realizes what she's lost.
Right, right.
And she freaks out. And she's like, what have I done? I think she's very remorseful. I mean, do you think that she would do it again? That's my question.
Hard to say.
It's hard to say because she's in love with him. She is. And the ending is really touching. And I think, do you want to talk about the ending?
Let's talk. No, please.
Why?
I'm kidding. What
the fuck? So for me, it's like, first of all, when he collapses when they're dancing, when he goes and asks her to dance again, I was a mess. Like, I was really a mess.
Were you crying?
Of course. The same song, she's sitting alone again.
Yeah.
He goes, they're dancing. His stomach ulcer bursts. I was so worried and scared. I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, please don't die. Please don't die. What is this? I was shook. Sorry. I was so shook and I was so happy that he was alive. I just had to say that because I don't remember being, it was so unexpected. I don't remember being that shocked in a long time.
Wow.
But I think it's such an interesting way. I think the fact that, you know, he has a stomach ulcer and the doctor tells her, you're going to be back here in 6 months.
Yeah.
I think it's such, and the reason why is that these foreign workers had so much stress. He said this is common among them because they have so much stress. I see it all the time. He's going to be back in 6 months. And it's such an interesting way to depict this institutionalized racism. I think it's the anti-Green Book. Because at the end of Green Book, it's like, okay, yeah, there's no such a, we cured racism. But I think this is like the anti-Green Book. Because it's literally telling her, this is going to repeat. You're going to, like, this is going to happen to you a lot. Yeah. And it's because he is not German. It's because he's an immigrant. It's also very tender. And it's also hopeful. At least I think it's hopeful because she's a mess. And she said, you know what? No, I'm going to take such good care of him. So it was just very unique. I thought it was very, very unique. And I really liked it.
Yeah.
Because it's hopeful, but it's not too hopeful.
It's just the right amount of hopeful.
Yes. It's tender, but it's also sad. Yeah, I mean, he's unconscious at the end. And there's a good, I think the last shot is also one of those like 15 second just static shots. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what did I just watch?
Yeah, like the doctor says he's going to be okay. But, you know, yeah.
And I think it was just a really interesting way to end it and to remind us that this problem is still here. They are always going to be facing tribulation because he is.
Absolutely. This isn't going to stop.
Yeah.
This is, if they stay together, this is the rest of their lives.
Right. But I also think that she was very shocked. And I think she got back to a point where she's like, this is my husband. She's telling the whole world. And I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The ending is so good.
Good.
It's funny because All That Heaven Allows ends the same way. Rock Hudson. Well, I don't. You haven't seen the movie.
Don't spoil.
I won't spoil. Yeah, it's the right amount of hopeful, but. You know, they know what they're in for. They know what they're in for, and they know they have what they've signed up for.
It was just interesting. Like, this movie was never not interesting. I never wanted to look away. I didn't want it to end. I really didn't.
It's, again, one of those cases of like a 90-minute movie that's just, it packs so much into 90 minutes. It's
right. Like, but I love the character of Ali. I think that he's so interesting. He's so poetic. And the fact that there's this language barrier, I think it speaks so much. Like, I think it's so, it's sad, but it's supposed to be sad that they can't communicate that well. But when he does speak, it's like he's speaking in poems and he's speaking truths. Like, he always knows, you know?
It's very eloquent.
Yes.
It's an interesting situation. When we meet him, he is at this bar. And there are a bunch of younger women there that, you know, he's sleeping with or that are interested in him. And he's very quick to want to get married.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny that first night, coffee turns into brandy really quick.
It does.
Like, they're at her door and she's like, would you like a cup of coffee? I can make us coffee. He's like, okay, sure. And then she's like, do you like brandy? I have brandy. He's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
But
and then, oh, you're staying over. And then, oh, here's the toothbrush.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
So that's very interesting. She is so ready to let him into her house.
Well, she wants someone and she's so lonely. Yeah. Yeah. She's so desperate for this connection with another person.
Yeah. Our animal instinct is to be surrounded by people and to be accepted by people.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And it leads to so much bad stuff.
Because for Emmy, being accepted by Ali is not enough. She wants to be accepted by everybody.
Right. Is she horrible for that?
No. No, she's not horrible for that. I mean, I think that's just basic. Her world is so small.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this movie fantastic, is that she has the rise and fall. She has the kind of rise again, but then it's not 100%. We're not 100% sure it's going to be okay. But then, like, she's flawed. She's human. It's a multi-layered movie. It's not a surface movie.
No.
You know, there is something to be said about how comfortable he is in that house.
His house is like six other people.
Six
other people
in a room. Mm-hmm. He comes here. She makes him coffee. They sleep together. I mean, pretty good setup. Like,
so do you think that he really loves her? Or do you think it is this convenient thing?
I do. I don't think it's a convenient thing.
It starts
thing.
Off as a convenient thing, maybe.
Maybe like that first night. But even that first night, like, he didn't have to sleep with her that night. He didn't. But you see him contemplate, there's that great pan where he's on his bed and then it pans to the door and he's out there and he's just like, listen, I want to talk with you. That's another thing. No, but that's another thing. Those ladies, when they're talking shit about those couples, they go like, oh yeah. And they don't even speak German. Like, all they want to do is have sex. And he literally goes in the room and says like, I want to talk a little more. And it was so sweet.
And then have sex.
What? No, I don't mean it like that. Like,
how much talking did they really do? That's what I want to know.
I think they talk a lot because every time they do talk, it's very philosophical. It's true. Fear eats the soul.
Fear eats the soul.
It's what he tells her. Okay, so why did he marry her that quickly? I don't think we can rule out like that he wasn't comfortable in that house. Like, I think that that's just, I mean, anyone would be. But yeah. He brings her money. I love that. When he brings money and he says, you're always paying for everything. You're always feeding me.
She's like, no, I'm going to put it in the drawer for you.
It's fantastic. I mean, he's great. I really like him.
Yeah.
I really like him.
Yeah. Even if he does, you know, very early on when it starts getting a little rough, just pieces out and goes and sleeps with other people. But
I think he had to assert his dignity there. Like, I think that he was, that's humiliating. Like, what happened was very humiliating.
Yeah, she's the one that's doing the humiliation. She's the one that's like, feel his arms. Because it happens after that, right?
It's horrible. And then he just dips. He bounces. He's like, you know what? I want couscous.
Yeah. Why won't she make couscous?
That's another question.
It's not even that she won't make it. She even says, like, I don't like it. It's bad.
Does she? I thought she said, you know, I don't know how to make couscous.
I'm pretty sure she says it's like not good. She just like doesn't like it.
Anyway. Should we get into our favorite sight and sound?
Let's do it.
Okay.
What was your favorite sight?
So first, let me just say, I'm noticing a trend on most of the movies we've watched. It's very hard to choose a favorite sight. And I think that's saying something about the list itself. Don't you?
Yeah.
Because I say it every time. Like every time we go, I'm like, oh, this one was so hard. But duh, it's hard because this is the list of the greatest movies of all time. And movies are sights and sounds. So for this one, it took a while, but I think, like I said, I love the first 10 minutes. I think it's within that first sequence. It's when the waitress is going around the bar. So when Emmy first walks into the bar, everyone's staring at her. And there's that like really surreal moment where they're all gawking at her. She takes a seat and then we return to that image. But this time the waitress is coming around to take her order and it closes in on Ali. And that's my favorite because it's so smooth. It's so like, it's just so cool. It's so well done. And before that, he was just in the crowd of all those guys there at the bar. And we didn't know that he's the main character. And then it zooms in on him. And I just thought it was classic and very cool.
Yeah, it's a very cool intro.
What about you?
There were three for me.
It's hard.
I just want to say special, like honorable mention to the two scenes where they're out eating. So the first scene when they do go to Hitler's favorite restaurant and it is the two of them and they're framed in the doorway.
It is great, yeah.
And it's just all empty tables. So and I also love, I love the scene. I love when they're ordering at the restaurant, the Chateaubriand. And like, they don't know what they're doing. And
she
stuff.
Goes, wow, like they really put you on the rack if you don't know what you're talking about.
She's like, yeah, we'll have it rare. He's like, okay, it'll come mostly uncooked.
And she's like,
oh no.
And he's like, no.
The waiter's so fed up. But no, I love that shot of them.
It is great.
After the waiter leaves and they're just looking towards the camera.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you mentioned, there's the scene of them at like this outdoor tables, the sea of yellow tables that are all empty.
Yeah.
And the waiter's standing over there. Beautiful.
It is.
It's so on the nose at this point. Like that is the movie, right? Like it's them in a sea of nothing with people staring at them from a distance. But it's going to have to go to the scene where they feel his muscles. Because first of all, when I saw that scene, I'm like, that could be a painting, like in a gallery. And you would see that, just them like with their arms on his arm. And you would just get like kind of
doing
circles
right around him.
Yeah. And he's just kind of standing there and like obliging, but it's like, he's not happy.
He looks like a statue.
He looks like a statue. And it's beautifully framed. And that's my favorite sight. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It is beautifully framed.
What was your favorite sound?
My favorite sound has got to be him calling her Habibi. No question. Like the second I heard that, I was like, this is what every girl wants. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's so...
Habibi. Habibi.
Are you kidding me?
I know. That's really good.
What's yours?
Mine is the song that their song.
Yes.
Their song. It has to be their
it's
song.
It's got
to
be their song.
Yeah.
They, I want to listen.
First, when they first meet, is because he asked her to dance and they dance to the song. And then later when they reconcile, they dance to the same
it
song.
It was called something because she says when she comes back to the bar at the end, she says, can you put on?
Yeah.
Or was it?
What it was called.
I think something gypsyism.
Nichts Mann verheiratet?
Mein Mann ist tot. Schon lange. Was arbeiten Sie denn?
Mit Autos. Ganze Tag. Immer.
Mhm. Und abends gehen Sie dann hierher?
Ja. Hat schön Musik. Viele Kollegen Arabisch.
It's a great song.
See, what's cool about that, too, is that's like from, you know, like the 1930s,
the
1940s, and what happened in Germany then.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of bringing that, it's like it's kind of a cool way of keeping that looming over the movie, mm-hmm. the whole sort of Hitler-Nazi thing, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and it's like a remnant of that era. But it's also a beautiful song, you know, it's this beautiful German song. But yeah, I love it. I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
What does Pauline say?
Pauline says nothing.
No!
Nada.
No! I was waiting for this.
All I know, so all I could find of Pauline's, she talked about one Fassbender movie, and it was Merchant of Four Seasons, which he did a couple years before this one. And this is what she had to say about it. She said, it's an art thing, all right, but perhaps not a work of art. And most important of all, it isn't likable.
Wow.
So, yeah.
A girl wants to be entertained. What did I say?
As far as I know, she did not review this movie and didn't review most of Fassbender's movies, which is weird. I almost wonder, I feel like I should, I'm not really qualified to speak about this, but I wonder if a lot of Fassbender's movies came over after the fact. This came out during her heyday as a critic. And it's funny because this was Fassbender's first like international success. So this was released internationally.
That is really weird. But, very disappointed. I really wanted to know what she thought.
Like, because I have the books of Pauline's.
Yeah.
Each book of hers covers, like, from this date to this date, and then this date to mm-hmm. this date. And it's not every review she wrote in that time. It's, like, ones
right.
that she's selected.
Uh-huh.
But I went through my books. I Googled Pauline Kael, Fassbender, Pauline Kael, Ollie Creates the Soul. Nothing. Nothing.
Wow.
You know what? I haven't seen Merchant of Four Seasons. So, but... Yeah, I don't know. This is a tough one to call. I don't know. I don't know what she would have thought of this. Because on one hand, you could see her really liking it. But then also at the same time, I don't know.
She's kind of a wild card.
She is a wild card. She's hard to predict. Should we get into Letterboxd?
Let's do it. Okay, so this, I just want to start with one that is actually 4.5 stars and a like.
Oh, let's hear it.
Just Make the Man Some Couscous.
A lot of reviews on there were talking about couscous.
Never has a bowl of grains been so controversial. Okay, here's another one. Okay, yeah. I just have to, this is the sister to that. Quote, making couscous, end quote, is a fantastic euphemism for fucking.
That's what it is. That's what it is. This one's a little longer. It's a star and a half.
Okay.
So she says, nearly every single man I've been in a relationship with,
I saw this one,
or even just been on a single date with, has insisted I'll love this film. After being recommended it yet again, I decided to rewatch in case the circumstances of my first viewing clouded my judgment. Still, just doesn't do anything for me. Feel like it's constantly on the brink of giving Ollie some interiority, and then takes two steps back to focus on Emmy, who I frankly don't even think is a good actor. A lot of people are talking about the acting.
What the heck?
And then she says, also the framing of characters within doorways, windows feels so obvious. I mean, sure, but come on. Sometimes, look, sometimes it's okay to be on the nose.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so.
It works. And then she ends up saying, anyways, if another dude tells me to watch this movie, I'm pulling up this review. End of conversation.
Nice. A lot of them were about, first of all, can I just say that it was hard to find bad reviews for this movie on Letterboxd. At least I found. But a lot of them were about either the acting, which I thought was really weird, or they were about Ollie being one-dimensional. I personally don't think he is. And this,
no.
I think this goes to say, I think this has to do with the whole language barrier a lot.
I think so too. And the fact that he's a man in, you know, he's an immigrant in the 70s in West Germany, and he's not, I think people are mistaking his kind of like quiet, like, and yeah, there is a language barrier, but they're mistaking his like nature for like him being one-dimensional.
Exactly.
Like, no, that's just how he
feels.
Is.
Very real.
He feels very real. And honestly, the acting from both of them is great. Like, there's never a second where I wasn't in it.
I think so too. Here's 2.5 stars. This has a really strong opening, but the film ultimately falters. Fassbender doesn't give Ali any real character or substance. He treats him as a prop in order to tease out everyone else's racism. The film ends up treading the same water for 90 minutes and doesn't go much of anywhere. I don't think that... I think there's such a clear turn in the third act.
For sure.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's no merit to that. That's a bad review.
I think Ali does feel very real to me because I feel like as an immigrant in the 70s, like my grandpa was from Lebanon and he came here literally in the 70s. He was not a flamboyant character. Like he very much did kind of keep to himself. And, you know, with us, he was very open, but to the public, he was very just this like nice man, just tried to keep kind of to himself. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not comparing the two at all because my grandfather wasn't black. But still, I mean, I think there's something to say about just because someone is not a very loud, flamboyant character doesn't mean that they don't have substance. I think he has so much substance, especially when he goes to Couscous Lady's house. I think that's him taking a stand
and come on.
Asserting his dignity. I mean,
absolutely. He has so many great moments like that where you see the inner dialogue in his head, too. And it's like,
even when he does speak, he's very poetic. He's very wise. I don't know.
Someone said, more old person sex, frowny face. Also, you never see them have sex. And also, never. What's the problem?
What's the problem with old people? They're people too.
We need to see more dicks in movies and more old people having sex.
I love when she wakes up, she puts on her robe and she turns over and he's in bed and he just like turns over and she's like, oh my God, like I did that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I love like, that. Yeah,
she's like, wow, I can't believe I actually did that. Like, this was crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. Well, I too can relate to lack of couscous being a deal breaker.
I just want some couscous.
That sounds good.
Do you ever get that curried couscous from Mendocino Farms?
No, but thanks for the suggestion.
It's good. Also, someone gave it 3 stars and said Phantom Thread before it was cool.
What?
I don't even get that one.
I don't get it at all. 1.5 stars. This is so fucked up. 1.5 stars. This movie was as bad as the lead actress's teeth.
Oh, man.
So fucked up.
Here's the thing. I love when actors have fucked up teeth.
I love it, too. I love it when actors look like real people.
Yeah. If you're an actor, don't fix your fucked up teeth.
Don't
do it.
Don't fix your nose. It's character. Don't fix your teeth.
When David Bowie fixed his teeth, you're like, oh, why'd you do that? Someone said, this is 3 stars. Buy sluts for sluts.
What?
Someone said... 3 stars. Too much penis, first of all, which goes... What? You see a penis like twice for like 2 seconds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They say too much penis and use of the word whore. Last 20 minutes made a good movie weird and sexually deranged. Sexually deranged? What happens in the last 20 minutes that makes it deranged?
He goes and has sex with someone his own age, which is, some might say, the least deranged. Yeah. I don't know. I think the consensus is... We both love this movie.
Yeah. Overall, I'm like not a huge Fassbender fan. There's some of his I really, really, really love. This is one of them. I also love The Marriage of Maria Braun. I think you'd really like that one. He's an interesting filmmaker for sure. But I think because of his personal life and which seeps through into the movies a lot of the time, I think this is kind of like one of his purer movies, like from a subject matter standpoint. Mm-hmm. So I'm like not a huge fan, but this is a great movie.
Okay.
It's a genuinely great movie.
Do you think it should be on the list?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Do you?
I really loved it. I actually do think it's a great movie about racism. And I think there should be more movies like it on the list. And I think that it's pretty good. Like, it's great. I don't know. Like, for example, like... Imitation of Life, no. This, yeah.
You know what's funny? While All That Heaven Allows was like the main touchstone for this, he also mentioned Imitation of Life as an influence on this movie.
Right, and they're right next to each other on the list. Yeah, it's so funny.
This blows Imitation of Life out of the water. There's no contest. I mean,
I think it's a really felt movie. Like I was really broken up at the end. I really was.
God.
What are we watching next week?
Next week is Jean Renoir's Rules of the Game. You seen it before? I saw it. No. Again, I saw these like, 8-10 years ago.
When you were
I liked it. Wait, listen.
If Film Bro Greg liked it, it's probably.
Maybe I'll hate it now.
Great. I don't know. Greg, it's been a pleasure.
It has been. Thanks for watching and talking about this with me.
Yep. Now get out of my basement.